Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
The universe so big as the one where we live, with 100 billion of galaxies, with each galaxy with 100 billion of stars, probably with many of these stars having planets, it could be possible that our life could evolve the way we know on Earth.
That's Father Jose Gabriel Funes. He's an astronomer and director of the Vatican Observatory, talking about the Vatican's interest in extraterrestrial life. We're going to be talking about that for the next half hour of Issues Etc. Ken Samples joins us. You can as well. 1-877-623-6943. It's Tuesday afternoon, November the 17th. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can Twitter questions or comments to us at @issuesetc. Ken Samples, a senior research scholar for Reasons to Believe in Anaheim, California, co-author of the book Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, A Rational Christian Look at UFOs and Extraterrestrials. Ken, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
Given what we know about the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church vis-a-vis reason, science, things like that, why do you think they're interested in extraterrestrial life?
I think probably there's a couple reasons. I think, first of all, they view it as kind of one of the big questions of life. I mean, we are raising the question of origins. We're raising the question of, are human beings alone, human solitude, and all of those kinds of questions. I think, secondly, the Vatican is very attentive to the idea of science-faith issues. And to some extent, I think that the Vatican feels that it missed the boat in the Galileo affair, and therefore they are very cautious and wanting to kind of present a viewpoint that's a little more affirming of science and things of that nature. So I think there are probably a couple reasons that are behind their emphasis.
Given what the Bible teaches with regard to these things, do you think that the interest is warranted?
Well, you know, what's interesting, Todd, is even Thomas Aquinas, and he lived in the 13th century, the very famous Catholic philosopher, Thomas Aquinas raised these questions. You know, he asked, is it possible that God has created life, you know, somewhere out in the universe? So it's certainly not a question that kind of emerges only here in the modern world. I think this is a profound question. There are Christians who think it's possible that maybe God would have created life on another planet. I have to say, however, when you look really at the scriptures, I think it seems improbable, unlikely, that God would have created life elsewhere. Now, can I say I know that for sure, slam dunk, end of argument, case closed? I don't think I can go that far, but I think when you begin to look at the scriptures, they seem to indicate that this is the creative work of God here on planet Earth. And I think that there are philosophical and theological questions or challenges if there is life on other planets. But again, I don't know that I don't think I can be definitive in closing the door.
On the one extreme, and let's just deal with that at the outset, there are those for whom this is not a question at all. They believe firmly that there not only is life elsewhere, intelligent life, advanced life, human-like life, but that we've had some kind of intercourse with it, be it visits or abductions. Of course, this is very popular nowadays in fiction and pop culture. How do we respond as Christians with a biblical worldview?
Well, I think you've set it up nicely. I mean, there is certainly the question of whether there is extraterrestrial life, and in some respects that is a scientific question. It has theological implications. But then, of course, you have this whole phenomenon of UFOs and extraterrestrials, and as you mentioned, things like abduction, close encounters, you know, even religious messages that are said to come from these beings. In fact, Todd, the term channeling, which is very deeply embedded in occult practice and in the New Age, that term actually came out of an alleged interaction with an alien being. To me, anytime you have UFO religion, you have occultism. You have people that are involved in secret practices that, according to the Bible, are forbidden by the people of God, and potentially doors that open up to the spiritual occult world. So I would argue, and in fact do in the book Lights in the Sky, that UFO religion is deeply embedded in the occult. Now, that doesn't mean all of it's true. There may be a lot of quackery, there may be a lot of falsehood, but the truth of the matter is that the religious ideas involved in UFO religion are occult religious ideas.
Can we make another distinction here? I've actually seen something flying in the sky I couldn't identify. My daughter and I were driving right toward our house. We saw something passing over the house. Couldn't identify it, but that's all it is for me. Something flying over the house I couldn't identify. It didn't look at anything I'd seen before, but that doesn't necessarily mean, and it's certainly not in my case, that it's going to be an alien visiting my neighborhood. It seems to me to be a question of kind of how we think about these things critically.
Absolutely. I mean, from that standpoint, there are three theories. I mean, most people who write credibly in this area, either from a scientific point of view or a theological point of view, would readily admit that the vast majority of unidentified flying objects are simply misidentifying some kind of natural phenomena. It may be some kind of aircraft. It may be some image in the skies themselves. It may be some type of hoax. So that's kind of the misidentified theory. Then, of course, there are people who say, no, there may be misidentified flying objects, but there are actually spacecrafts visiting planet Earth, metallic crafts from other parts of the solar system. Then there's a third view, and that, of course, is that this is a psychic phenomena, that this is some kind of spiritual reality, not some kind of physical reality. But I would agree with you, Todd, regardless of how much credence you give to these three categories, I think the overwhelming evidence is most of what people see is probably best understood in some natural context.
Would you be surprised at all if, let's say, they've been searching for remnants of water on the moon or on Mars, or they could find perhaps, some believe they have, the evidence of microscopic life on a planet like Mars, long dead. Would that surprise you? Would that overturn anything in your Christian worldview?
No, it wouldn't. In fact, I would say this, Todd. I would say the fact that NASA is looking so heavily to the possibility of some kind of microbial life on Mars, if there's water, water is a necessary requirement to have some kind of carbon-based life. What I think is interesting there is I think the fact that NASA is looking so much to some kind of life in outer space is a concession that the naturalistic idea that life evolved purely naturally on this planet is basically something they cannot support. So they are looking elsewhere. I think it actually shows a problem with the naturalist worldview. Now, let's suppose they did find some kind of microbial life. That is very different than finding sentient beings, finding beings who have minds and will and all of these kinds of things. And Todd, it's also possible within our solar system that, you know, you have life here on planet Earth. Some of those microbial elements may have been ejected into space purely naturalistically, and have ended up on these other planets. So even if we found that life, it wouldn't necessarily, I think, even raise questions about the truth of Christianity.
Carl Sagan popularized an argument much older than his old show, Cosmos, which seems to be kind of one gigantic truckload of numbers piled on top of another. We have a universe with billions of galaxies, each galaxy billions of stars, and around these stars, certainly planets. It's just inevitable that the chances are going to bring about someplace, somewhere, life like ours. We heard that from Father Funes at the beginning of the show. What do you make of the argument itself?
Yeah, that was a very common position. Carl Sagan, the famous Cornell scientist, astronomer, was on the Cosmos program. 35 years ago, he set forth clearly this argument that you've got an abundance of life sources, evolution, the origin of life from purely natural processes is something that probably takes place quite easily, and therefore it'll be inevitable that we will encounter some kind of extraterrestrial life. But Todd, the opposite has actually been the findings over the last 35 years. There was a recent book a few years ago called Ward and Radley was the name of the authors.
About 15 seconds here.
And it was called Rare Earth. It's even more and more difficult for science to argue that they are getting close to finding life.
I want to talk about that on the other side of the break, because I heard someone say, well, I don't think there is other intelligent life, because if the chances are so much in favor, because there's so much space out there, real estate for life to develop, it already would have, we already would have found it. It would be, its evidence would be in abundance as well. We're talking with Ken Samples about recent Vatican conference on extraterrestrial alien life. He's author of the book, co-author of the book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, a rational look, Christian look at UFOs and extraterrestrials. You can purchase this book under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, co-authored by Ken Samples. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, or email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the Promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. And you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org. Click Promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the Promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the Promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about extraterrestrial alien life. The Vatican is interested. Ken Samples is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, November the 17th. You can Twitter us at IssuesETC. You can send us an email, talkback@IssuesETC.org, or you can give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Ken, let's pick up where we left off. We had talked about the old argument that there's just so much real estate out there for life to develop on. If it's a natural process without a supernatural intervention, then it's going to happen, says Carl Sagan and so many others. But it seems to me the argument works just as well, if not better, the other way around. If it is a natural process, so easy to come by, and there is so much real estate, space, and time out there, it seems that it would just be busting at the seams. We would be finding it everywhere. What do you think of that argument, or the reversal of the argument?
Yeah, I think that what we've seen in the scientific community, Todd, in the last 35 years indicates that there is an increasing awareness on the part of astrobiologists. Those are people who are looking for the possibility of life, that the universe is actually inhospitable. We live in the hospitable zone. There's only a small part of any particular galaxy where carbon-based life is possible. I mean, this is the position that is being advocated by the scientists. And so I think Sagan's theory was wildly optimistic. There are lots of difficulties in finding a place where carbon-based life could live. And then, of course, even if there were life out there, I mean, how far is the nearest galaxy? 25 trillion miles? I mean, the idea that there would be extraterrestrials who could communicate, that's very difficult. So I think the argument does work the other way. And in fact, the scientific community seems to be moving in the direction of accepting the idea that life on Earth, if it's not unique, it's incredibly rare.
How would you respond to someone who says, if, and this seems to hold in it kind of the nut of a misunderstanding of a Christian viewpoint of these things, but someone who assert, if life is found anywhere else but Earth, and any kind of life, that is, at whatever size or development complexity, then it completely overturns the Christian view of this world, its creator, and everything else part and parcel of Christianity.
I'm really glad you raised that. One of my favorite science authors is a man named Paul Davies. He is an agnostic. He admits that. But he raised the question in one of his writings that, you know, if we discovered extraterrestrial life, that would potentially overturn historic Christianity. And the idea that was developed in his essay was that Christ, or the God of the Bible, is kind of a tribal earthly deity. And so if it was discovered that there was life in some other galaxy or some remote part of the universe, then that would kind of undermine the whole question of a biblical deity that's so earth-centered. I would take strong exception with that. I would argue that the God of the Bible is the God of the cosmos. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The New Testament says that God spoke the universe into existence. So it seems to me that if in the possibility that we were to discover some evidence of life in the cosmos, I don't think that would challenge the truth of historic Christianity. Christ is not only the Savior who comes to the earth, he is the Lord of the cosmos. And even C.S. Lewis said, if we did discover life, we would undoubtedly find that they were also creatures of the Creator. So I would differ with Paul Davies. I think that none of this would necessarily serve as a defeater for the truth of the Bible or the truth of Christianity.
I guess maybe Christians have conceded too much. Has science in any way demonstrated that there is life elsewhere? Some people simply assume that scientists have.
No. You know, again, it's much more likely that they may find some microbial life, or they may find the remains of microbial life. But the idea, I mean, you have this whole institute, the SETI research, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. It's been going at it for a very long time, and they have found no evidence that there is intelligent life in space.
Well, I guess what worries people, maybe Christians casually worried about it, is that one of these days a big discovery will be made, and Christianity will be faced with the prospect of defending itself against science that says we're not the only ones in the universe. What would be your counsel to such concerns?
Well, in one respect, I think that Christians probably need to avoid two viewpoints when it comes to science. One of them is, of course, advocated by the naturalist worldview, and that is they deify science. Science becomes kind of a religion, and you often hear skeptics who have rejected the God of the Bible, who have rejected a supernatural God. Often science becomes their de facto religion. Well, we reject that idea categorically. On the other hand, I don't think Christians should defy science, and that is, I think we should see science as a tool of gaining knowledge about the material physical universe, about life. It certainly is not a perfect enterprise. It certainly doesn't give us all knowledge. There are some things that science cannot tell us, issues of spirituality, of ethics, issues of revelation that come even outside of the universe. But I think that Christians should have a healthy respect for science. And in that sense, I think if they're thinking, what are the implications of my worldview, Todd, the Christian worldview birthed science. Science was still birthed in all of the ancient civilizations, and it was in the middle of the 1600s in Christian Europe when science as a thriving enterprise took place. And so I don't see scientific discoveries challenging science, especially in light of how dependent science is on the Christian worldview.
Finally, with only a minute, if Pope Benedict were to ask you about extraterrestrial alien life, what would you have to say to him?
Well, I think I would say, look, these are all big questions, but I think that we have many issues that are even more important right here in the here and the now on planet Earth. I think there are too many issues of a spiritual, theological, and moral need that need to be responded to over a speculative question, an important question, no doubt. And again, I can't say I know for sure regarding life or no life, but I think there are too many important issues right here on planet Earth that need to be addressed.
Ken Samples, a senior research scholar for Reasons to Believe in Anaheim, California. He's co-authored the book Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, A Rational Christian Look at UFOs and Extraterrestrials. Ken, thank you very much for being our guest.
Pleasure to be with you, Todd.
A special thanks to Pastor Christopher Eskett and Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia. They are part of the Issues Etc. 300. The Issues Etc. 300 is a growing group of congregations that have pledged to support Issues Etc. with $1,000 or more in their annual budgets. You can find out how your congregation can become part of the Issues Etc. 300 by going to our website, issuesetc.org, and clicking support. You'll find there a flyer that you can print off and take to your congregation, to your pastor, to your elders, to your church council, whoever makes the decisions, when you ask them to join the Issues Etc. 300. It's just $1,000 a year in your church's annual budget. You can put it wherever you'd like in your church's budget in support of Issues Etc., and your congregation becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. When we come back, hour two of Issues Etc., Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute will join us. We'll talk with her about several things, about the media treatment of Sarah Palin. She's back out with a book that has yet to be released, and already she's making the rounds and getting a few bumps and bruises in the media along the way. We'll also talk about Catholic Charities in Washington, D.C., and what they think about a proposed same-sex marriage law in the nation's capital. We'll have the Issues Etc. comment line in the middle of the second hour, and then we'll spend the last half hour of Hour 2 of Issues Etc. with Dr. Kim Riddlebarger, co-host of the network radio program called The White Horse Inn. We'll be talking with him about lessons learned from the fall of Rome. We'll be concentrating on Jerome and Augustine, both of them reflecting on the fall of Rome, and both of them making some distinctions. And what do we learn today, especially American Christians, who are so, well, many in many ways like our ancient pagan Roman counterparts, confusing the kingdom of the gods, in the case of the Roman pagans, with the kingdom of men, or the kingdom of God in our case, and the kingdom of men. We somehow think about American prosperity, American well-being, American exceptionalism as part and parcel of the church. And as America goes, so goes the church. Kim says that's a dangerous equivocation to make. We will see what he has to say about it in the second hour of the program. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how Sarah Palin is faring. You know, it was not a very successful run for vice president, of course, but she's back and the media is paying attention to her. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest in hour two of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.